To all the wanderers,
wanderers,
free thinkers,
and throwaway kids,
welcome to the dumpster fire.
Let's get dumpster diving.
We are live.
I'm excited.
Aaron, I gotta take the time to do this. Happy late birthday.
Well, thank you so much.
Do you want to tell everybody what you had for your birthday?
Oh, wow. I had some amazing lasagna and some tres leche cake, which was also absolutely the bomb. Mm-hmm. And kudos to the chef. It was great.
Very happy 29th birthday.
Thank you. Yep. Thank you. 29 forever. Exactly.
And you'll get your present when I see you again.
I can't wait. Justin forgot her present.
I'm super excited.
He had a whole extra week to prepare. Still forgot it.
That's okay. I totally get it.
So obviously we have Justin with us today. We have Morticia Adams.
Howdy.
And we have me, your resident host, pyromaniac, gun enthusiast, Brian. So we're back. We're a little late, guys. We apologize. We had scheduled to shoot on Thursday. Life gets in the way, especially with everything that's been going on lately. So we're here on Sunday. We'll be dropping this as soon as we're done. We're gonna work on that. But with that said, we're back.
The best things come to those who wait.
Mm-hmm. We are back, and I'm glad we've got the goddess with us tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Persephone is waning. It is that time of year. I'm really looking forward to going below decks for a while. It's my favorite. Yeah. This is my favorite time of year coming up, and I can definitely tell I can feel the shift coming. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I love the feeling of when you first get that nip in the air from fall.
Yeah.
When the heat finally breaks and the humidity disappears, and it makes me feel alive.
So, quick update on the caterpillars. The eggs are hatched. They are gone.
I did not see a single egg out there.
Yes. So we looked.
Now we have to find the chrysalis.
Yes. Apparently they will hatch and then migrate away from the milkweed.
Yeah.
So they're likely up in, there's a large tree in my front yard.
Yeah.
We need to look up in there.
I'm not much of a climber, but I will climb if I need to find a cocoon.
I have a ladder.
I'm climbing. Yeah. I'm really climbing.
Are you?
I'm climbing. Yeah. I can help out with that.
So I avoided mowing for quite a while, and I was able to mow today because I noticed they were gone. So I did not hit the milkweed either. I mowed around it, so it is still climbing up the little hook out there. So, but yeah, that's our quick update on that. So today, I actually accidentally ran across a pretty neat one. I've got a bottle of Old Forester 86. Sweet. Now, this is called Old Forester Classic 86. It's 86 proof. Came across this just kind of looking through the mid and low shelf, wanting to get through that. We've been kind of picking at the mid shelf, and I've moved up to the high shelf once or twice. I've got a really good one that's donated. We'll do an episode on soon. But, we're kind of running out. We've done over 20 episodes.
That was
20 different bourbons. So, yeah. Really? This one stuck out to me. And I got it home. I'd heard of it before. But it does have a really cool history. Now, this is made by Brown-Forman Corporation. Brown-Forman Corporation is based out of Louisville. They make Jack Daniels, which is a Tennessee whiskey.
Yeah.
Early times, Old Forester, Woodford, and then they have several other alcohols that are... Canadian Mist is a Canadian whiskey.
Oh my.
Collingwood Blended. I've never seen that ever.
Story about Canadian Mist.
Right.
it's not a great Canadian whiskey. They make a scotch. They make three of them. Make some wines. And then they make a ready-to-drink wine cooler called Little Black Dress.
Nice.
Oh,
props on the name, guys. Finlandia Vodka also is a very good cheap vodka, and they make that. But Old Forester itself, what was cool about this is when I looked it up, this has been on the market continuously longer than any other bourbon. So it's been on the market for 150 years as of 2020. Lord. So 151 now.
That's crazy.
It was the first bourbon to be sold exclusively in sealed bottles. That was a big deal because at the time it was easy to adulterate bourbons.
Yeah.
So they sold this in these newly sealed bottles. The technology wasn't there to easily seal and make tamper proofs.
Yeah.
As a pharmacy product. Supposedly Old Forester actually used to be spelled with two R's.
Yeah.
It's because a they had an endorsement by a pharmacist whose last name was Forrester.
Yeah.
Or a doctor. And that's where this came from. So, yeah, interesting history here.
That's interesting. A lot of alcohol's got their roots in being medicine. Once upon a time, you take even soda pops. I mean, Coca-Cola Classic was started by a Civil War veteran as a medicine, as a tonic.
Yeah.
And it also had cocaine in it at the time.
Did it have opium as well, or just cocaine?
I'm not exactly sure of the original recipe, but I know for a fact it had cocaine for many years.
Yeah.
I imagine it had other things. Probably. I mean, it was really common, but opium or Dilaudid in whatever you're making. Back then, if you killed the pain, you fixed the problem.
Right. Yeah. And if you can make yourself functional again, then that's really all they cared about.
Yeah.
Yep. So Old Forester makes a bunch of these. They make a bunch of different Old Foresters. I found out it's a pretty established bourbon. This company, the Old Forester Company, was one of six, which included Buffalo Trace, to get a license to continue to produce liquor through Prohibition.
Nice.
It would make sense that this one got it because during Prohibition you could still sell whiskey. It just had to be sold as a pharmacy product.
Yeah.
So that made a lot of sense when I heard that. Yeah. Now my mission is to find what the other four are. Try those out.
So it could also be Old Loophole and still Forester.
There we go, yes.
Yep.
Smells like a pretty classic 80 proof bourbon.
I've already got the shivers.
The other option.
That completely described how I feel about the verse.
The other option tonight was Crown Royal Rye. So that'll be on soon. Which is a Canadian whiskey. It will be our first. So, everybody.
Salud.
Salud. Yeah, that's got a bit of a kick to it.
It's kind of sharp at the front, kind of bitter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't have a lot of the sweetness. A lot of the bourbons we try hit you with that sweetness first. And that one doesn't play around.
No. It's like...
It's a kick to the tongue.
It is.
There's no foreplay going on with this one.
No.
It's just going in dry. It's mighty.
Yeah.
It's mighty.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've got one we'll also be doing soon, which is a very popular one. It's Wild Turkey. And I can't for the life of me figure out if Wild Turkey is supposed to be like a low shelf or a mid shelf.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I've tried it before, and if I'm recalling right, I think it tastes just like Jim Beam.
I have to give this props, though. Like, I don't have that I could breathe fire feeling
it's got
now.
It's real mellow and warm afterwards.
And
it's got a low finish. It hits you right off the bat as soon as it hits your tongue, but then it just finishes. That's pretty interesting. Most of them are the opposite. They ease you in and then kick you on the back end.
Right.
Their claim to fame was that they used 72% corn, 18% rye, and 10% malted barley. And that is the exact same mash they used for Woodford Reserve.
Okay.
It's higher rye than your normal bourbon, so that's one of the things
that's
they did.
That's probably where that punch at the beginning is coming from, because rye's got that little bit of kick to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this aftertaste is very substantial. Like, what is that? I'm trying to figure out what that is that I'm...
Yeah, it does have a very...
You can almost tell. You could just... It's just almost...
Like on the tip of the tongue.
Something you can tell, but I can't.
Yeah.
Hmm, interesting. So far, this is definitely the most interesting, I think, I've...
This is a departure. A lot of them you can really, really tell the similarities in them, and this one's different. It really is.
It really is. You can taste a big difference there.
Mm-hmm. So, we kind of went back and forth about what to do today, and one of the things that's come up a lot of times, I don't know if it's ever been requested, but it's in our lane. I think everyone will enjoy this.
In our wheelhouse, for sure.
Yeah, or impossible artifacts.
Or OOPART, out-of-place artifacts.
Out-of-place artifacts. So there's a lot of these. They used to pop up. I mean, I've been hearing about these since I was a kid. And what this is they'll find these things that are out of time. And you've heard us mention repeatedly that we think the timeline is wrong. Like, we don't have an accurate timeline for how long we've been here.
Yeah.
And these are part of that. But there's some that are almost like science fiction weird.
Yeah.
And very that's odd. When I say and that's interdimensional.
Every one of these have some sort of naysayer. I haven't come across a single one that there wasn't somebody going, it's not real, it's fake, it's...
Yeah.
But some of these are pretty interesting. One I just recently discovered a couple weeks ago, and I just was looking it up now. The Piri Reis map. Have you guys heard of this?
It was before Antarctica had ice.
Yeah, it was 1530. It was an Ottoman admiral and cartographer, Piri Reis, that made this map, but it shows Antarctica. And there's really no doubt. I've seen the map, and it definitely shows Antarctica.
Well, and the weirder thing is that odd extra landmass that's coming off of South
it's
America.
Got an
extra
landmass, and it shows Antarctica at a time when Antarctica had not been mapped, not in Europe or Asia, at least. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty interesting. It shows a mythical island of Antilla, and it also shows what seems to be a pretty detailed depiction of Japan at a time when Turkey had not explored Japan.
And the coastlines are so accurate, considering what.
It's wildly accurate for the time and the technology, and it kind of shows that they knew a little more than what we thought they knew at that time. I think you've got pockets of knowledge, and because knowledge didn't travel as freely and easily as it does today, that it would be perfectly reasonable for one small place to know something that 1,000 miles away, they don't know that yet, because information doesn't travel that well.
Right.
So I don't think that would be that unusual for that time. For that time period.
Very similar to the coelacanths. You know, they thought they were extinct forever. Yeah. That was the general common knowledge.
Yeah.
And then this one tribe is like, psh, we've been living off those things for centuries. Mm-hmm. Like, where have you been?
You just got to fish deeper.
Dr. Really
Hapgood is the man that actually first suggested that was Antarctica he was drawing. And interestingly enough, Einstein agreed with them. Yeah. Now, modern research all says, no, that's not possible. But You go with Einstein. It's decently safe.
I mean, if it looks like a duck and it
you got
walks
so
like
many
a duck.
Spots like Göbekli Tepe. You've got the step pyramids off the coast of a Japanese island that are in the water. The last time, look up these pictures of the. Just type in step pyramid coast of Japan, and there is no doubt that it is they are man-made step pyramids. The last time they were exposed, not underwater. Would have been pre-Ice Age.
Yeah.
So your modern science says, it's either naturally occurring or they just built them underwater. So you'd rather believe that they had scuba gear.
Right.
And could build something that took decades to build underwater than to believe our timeline's wrong. A lot of times science can be just as dogmatic as religion. They get a belief and a lot of the science community will fight against that belief. Even with new evidence, they'll fight it. It's pretty crazy. And Göbekli Tepe, this is in modern-day Turkey, in northern Turkey. This site was a religious site that's been dated to between 15,000 and 17,000 years ago. Would have housed about 65,000 people. It's a religious monument. It was purposely buried. We don't know when, but very obviously purposely buried with stone and wood. We don't know why it was purposely buried. But 15,000 years ago, we've only been planting crops, supposedly, for 11,000 years. 11,600. Hmm. So how do you feed 6,500 people if you're hunter-gatherers? Or 65,000 people? It's an impossibility.
Yeah, in one spot, that's really not going to be able to sustain
it completely goes against what we view as a timeline, but this timeline's always being moved. We were talking about earlier, when I was in high school, when you were in high school, 20 to 25,000 years was the estimate of how long anatomically modern man had been on the planet.
Yeah.
Right now, the estimate, and there's not really a lot of argument on this right now, 200,000 years. It's literally grown by 100 times just in the last 20 years. And so the more we know, the more the timeline changes. But they're still clinging to that, we've only been planting crops from 11,600 years ago is when we started planting crops. And I think there's a lot of evidence. You got the site in North Carolina, Topper. There's literally a line. I can't remember the name of the line. But as an archaeologist, when you're looking for man or evidence of man, you don't dig below this line because man doesn't exist below this line. Well, in the 90s, the head archaeologist over the Topper site was like, what's stopping me from keeping on digging?
Right.
And he found evidence tens of thousands of years beyond what we knew at that time for man to have been there. The Clovis people, their history goes deep. We have not found the beginning of it yet.
Yes.
So the Clovis points, we found literally millions of Clovis points all over North America and South America. And the more we know about the Clovis people, the deeper their history is. You've got that Indian tribe in, I think it's Nova Scotia, somewhere around there, that has claimed that their home was this island on the eastern coast of Canada for the last 15,000 years, at least. That's how far back their history goes. And science was like, there's no way. That was covered in ice 15,000 years ago. There's no way. They've literally found campsites now. They've found tools. We now know that their history goes back. So we really don't understand the Ice Age. We don't understand where man was during that
point. Well, there's the Viking sword Ulfbert.
Yeah.
And this one I'd forgotten about till I looked into this. But this sword is dated to 1800 to 1000 AD, and it's not possible. It's not supposed to be made like this. It's high carbon steel.
Yeah.
It's exceptionally made, and they're saying this shouldn't have been able to be manufactured up until the Industrial Revolution.
Well, you've got the legends of Damascus steel. It's where George R. R. Martin in Game of Thrones or Song of Ice and Fire got the Valyrian steel that looks like it swims. It looks like liquid metal. We have no living pieces today of actual Damascus steel, but there's tons written about the steel that was harder and sharper, and it had magical properties.
Yeah.
What we found is we finally found a piece of it. They had figured out in northern Iraq how to put nanocarbon fibers into their steel, and it was by ritual. They would burn bones and put all this extra carbon into the process, and it creates these nanotubes. And so I think that Viking, what was it called? The Ulfbert. Yeah. I think that might be an example of Damascus steel or a similar process.
A blacksmith in Wisconsin copied it. And he tried to use only the technology that was available at the time and said it was the most complicated thing he'd ever done.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
And when he got it done, he actually did say that he didn't think it would be possible for people of that age to do it.
Yeah.
And modern blacksmithing, I mean, a lot of the mystery's out of it. You can look up how to do this online and learn a lot. Yeah. Or shows about it.
Yeah, I mean, what's the Forged in Fire?
Forged in Fire, yeah.
That's an excellent show, excellent show. But, I mean, these are lay people that are forging blades, and very high-quality blades. It's kind of crazy.
It makes you wonder how they stumbled upon that process.
Yeah, that's something that's never kind of... I would have... There's not a timeline long enough for me to ever look at a rock and think, I could crush this, heat it up to 5,000 degrees, and then mold it into what I want.
But also, let's burn some bones with it.
Yeah, and throw bones
in it. So to me, this is almost something that happened as an accident in relation to a sacrifice. Yeah,
it sounds like it was based around some sort of ritual.
Yeah.
Because most societies across the globe at one point worship their ancestry.
That's what I was about to say, to infuse it with the spirit of.
Yeah, their spirit of their ancestor, or maybe it was an enemy that had been vanquished and take the power of their enemy by putting it into their weapons. Either one of those seems really plausible to me.
Which really then makes me think of, which we talked about this already, the Baghdad Battery.
Yeah.
Because it has signs of electroplating to it.
Yeah.
And, depending on who you talk to, of course. Some people are just like, nah, they just put scrolls in this thing.
Yeah, that's the argument against. But Tesla, Einstein, all of these people saw it and immediately was like, oh, if you put an iron rod in a vase and put a copper coil in it and then fill it with citric acid, which we know they were doing.
They were using grapes,
That is a battery. Now, the big argument against ancient Egypt or ancient Mesopotamia having electricity is, what were they powering? We would have evidence of what they're powering. Well, we do have evidence. You look at the hieroglyphs in the main chamber that goes straight down in the Pyramid of Giza. There are light bulbs, obvious light bulbs in the hieroglyphs. Mm-hmm. And to build that, they would have been building in complete darkness except for torchlight.
Right.
And this is incredibly detailed to almost the micrometer mm-hmm. work that they're doing. And they're doing it by torchlight? I don't think
so. Well, and also just the coloration, because they were extremely... anal almost
yeah.
about making sure that the coloration matched the real life subjects.
Yeah.
So
was,
yeah, for them to have that perfect. Good color, the good lighting would be very important.
Level of precision, it would require more lighting than just torchlight. And I mean, Tesla, he there at the end of his life really got obsessed with geometrical shapes and how to make an infinite power source. And he fully believed at the end of his life that the pyramid was the key to that and that it would require a charge of electricity. But once you had integrated it into your system, it would be a self-fulfilling energy. It would constantly replenish itself.
Like his boxes that he made,
yeah,
right? The Tesla box.
It would be an endless supply of energy, essentially, once you got it started. And you all know my experience with a pyramid. I mean, mm-hmm. I have to kind of believe him. I've seen a pyramid fly before. So.
Yeah, and now there's a U.S. government video of a pyramid flying.
I've half thought that I was crazy. If I hadn't had a witness that day, I would have thought I was crazy.
Yeah.
And then I get shown this video, and it is literally what I saw.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting.
That came with the latest release of all of the...
The info dump from the CIA and the Naval Intelligence. That was the two organizations through FIFA or whatever, Freedom of Information Act. Yeah, FIFA. Request. They dropped 3,000 videos altogether. I've watched probably about 200 of them, and I've only seen one pyramid.
Yeah,
so
which was the one I found almost immediately.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know why
right
I found
off,
it that quick.
Like,
I was
that's
like, dude,
Justin's pyramid.
That's a pyramid flying. Yeah. Watch this.
That's crazy.
Why was I drawn to that one?
Yeah.
Kind of strange.
Yeah. I was actually talking last night to one of my friends as we're hiking. We're looking up at the stars. And we both kind of had this moment of thinking about the vastness of space and how that little pinprick of light in the sky is literally larger than our sun.
Mm-hmm.
And how light just traveled millions of years to hit my eyeball.
Yeah.
My eyeball is the size of a marble, and something that's 100 times larger than our sun sent light over millions of miles to hit my... That's just mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Cosmic money shots.
Yeah.
So,
that would be a great band name.
It would, wouldn't it?
The Cosmic Money Shots.
There's also... I mean, that's... That makes me think... Ella and I have a star now. We actually have a binary star. Yeah.
I actually... I had an ex. I got a star named after me. And I have... I don't have any of the paperwork. I have no idea where my star is.
I bought some for my parents. A pair of stars.
Well, Tootsie has a star in the Bear Nebula.
Really?
Yeah.
That's
Ella
cool.
Got me as a gift. So if you want to see our binary star,
they're named Brian and Ella. It is at Wright Ascension 2776-0364 and declination negative 18.0397093.
Got it.
Okay.
That is out there.
I will remember all that.
Right.
So.
I will probably
post up a picture of that on the group.
So for you guys, because that backpack battery thing really fascinates me, and I know you guys are both well read on this. What are your guys' theories on what they were using these batteries for?
The first thing I thought was light.
Right.
And because of the shafts of the pyramids and the other things that they would have been doing.
Yeah.
And just the fact that they lived a very full social life in Egypt that I feel like they would have valued the ability to extend their working and play hours into the night.
Mm-hmm. And illumination is a game changer. It changes the way your society functions. It adds another 16 hours to your day in some cases in the winter.
Well, you have this potential for electricity here, and I think we've understood electricity longer than we think. And you go back to, there are two ways to make a watch: quartz movement and mechanical. And I think about that Greek computer we found.
Yeah, the Antikythera.
Yeah, that thing. I was thinking about that too.
Yeah, that is more complicated than a modern self-winding watch. Come on, that's crazy. This was made before Christ.
Well, I mean, I think we do ourselves a disservice when we look back at ancient man with this reductionist view of history. If anatomically modern man, meaning they had the same brain shape and size as ours, anatomically were just like us for the last 200,000 years, the one thing that set man apart from the rest of the natural world is our ingenuity. It's not the opposable thumb. There's monkeys with opposable thumbs. Raccoons have opposable thumbs. It's not the big butt that gives us the ability to run large distances. Yeah, those things help. It was our brain, though. Our ability to problem solve and overcome and to interact with our environment to solve problems. And I think it does us a disservice to look back at ancient man and say, oh, well, they didn't have the technology to do that. They couldn't have done this. We argued for couple hundred years about how they built the pyramids. We now know they just did it. They did the math. They figured it out. And these weren't slaves. I mean, a lot of the labor was done by, say, slaves, but the pyramids were actually built by architects, by paid laborers.
That was an honor,
knew what they were doing. They did the work. And I think a lot of that actually goes back to, like, the Masons, because the Masons, we know, those societies date back to ancient Egypt. And it was because they needed a way to accreditate someone. You know, so someone new didn't just come into town and say, hey, I'm a Mason.
Yeah.
Or I can do this, or I can do that. You became part of a group that knew the handshake, you knew the symbols. That way, other people could vouch for you. Be like, oh, yeah, he's one of us. He's an architect. He can do this work.
Which is basically how people describe the Masons to me. Yeah. As a female, I'll never, ever, ever be in that. But that's what, like, my ex-brother-in-law would describe the Masons as. It's a vetting process.
Yeah,
like,
that's
you know,
all it
this
is.
If he's a Mason, that this guy's a good guy, he's had other men speak for him, and, you know.
It's evolved to be outside of one line of work, but the word Mason is literally, they were masonaries.
They built.
And it was
structures.
A way to vouch for other masonaries to say, in an ancient world, when you couldn't Google this person, you couldn't do a background on him, it was a way to say, yeah, he does good work, he's one of us, hire him. And so we even see that going back to ancient Egypt. And it's funny, some of the earliest writings we have, so from Sumer, one of the oldest cuneiform writings we have is a receipt. It's literally
Doesn't
a receipt.
Doesn't that make sense?
Yeah, because that's what we needed. That's what we needed writing for, was to this bartering and this transact, because we live in, we've always been transactional. We've always had to be. And I think we were less so once upon a time. I think we probably viewed it differently than how we view transactionality now. But I think Paleolithic era was probably a different mindset, but I'll never know for sure. I would give my right leg to be able to go back to the Paleolithic era. But with one leg,
probably,
I wouldn't survive it.
Well, I was going to say, you probably would end up giving a leg or more once you got there. But
the more we know about it, the less the idea of short, brutal lives. They didn't live short, brutal lives.
No.
The evidence doesn't say that. Yes, you go back 1,000 years ago. Yes, they lived short, brutal lives. You go back 2,000. You go pre-cultivation of crops, there's no idea of property. There's no idea of government, because crops created property, the idea of property and boundaries and territory. We didn't have those ideas in the Paleolithic era. And the earth provided plenty for everyone, so there wasn't this fight for resource. And the population was low enough, and we didn't live outside our means. That wasn't even a thought. You couldn't live without outside of your means. If you did, you died. We don't really think there was what we would know as war in the Paleolithic area. We have 5,000 skeletons from at least 20,000 years or prior ago. Only 4 murders in 5,000, and they think at least one of those was a sacrifice. And there's some evidence now that that was a young girl, but they think she may have had a disease. Like, they were, it was like a... Mercy calling.
Well, and also maybe if they got rid of her as a sacrifice, then the disease would go with her. Yes.
Yeah, it protects the tribe.
And there's the strong possibility that what we actually saw there was after a large decline. So these people might have understood a history before them that did include all the trappings of modernity.
Yeah.
And that's why they had left that behind, and that's why
That's one of my running theories, because literally, if we've only been planting crops for 11,000 years, mm-hmm. that is literally less than 1% of modern man's time on this planet. 11,000 years compared to 200,000 years at least. I think we've probably hit pinnacles of population yes. in modernity. And maybe not in the same way. Maybe not the same technology.
Had a complete societal collapse.
It's collapsed multiple times, and we learn from our mistakes, but we keep on forgetting. As modernity creeps back in and we don't pass that information down, we kind of fall into the same trappings, and then something happens. We know for a fact 15,000 years ago, so y'all know that Yellowstone is a caldera. Yes. It's a megavolcano. When it blows, it'll be an extinction level event. There's one, like one and a half times the size of Yellowstone in northern Italy. It's essentially half of Italy. We know that it blew 15,000 years ago.
Yep.
That would have taken the population down probably to about 5 million people worldwide. There's 1.3 million people in Louisville Metro right now.
Yeah.
Imagine 5 million worldwide. That's an extinction level event. You could literally live your entire lifetime without meeting anyone from outside your tribe. That's an extinction level event. That's a reset. That was a reset button.
And this leads to the whole cataclysm theory, that we've had cataclysms that made these myths and that made these giant geographic changes.
Yeah.
This is where Atlantis
potentially the deluge myth, which you see on every inch of the planet from the Paleolithic era.
Yep.
And I mean, there's a lot of evidence. You look at Graham Hancock, his haters are starting to apologize to him.
Yes, they are.
And he's kind of a wackadoo. I'm not going to take that away from him. He's earned the wackadoo status. But his science is good.
Yeah.
It just is.
He's cleaned it up. I think he started out with a lot of far-fetched stuff and then slowly proved what he could prove and let go of some stuff. And that's how science is supposed to work.
That's exactly how it's supposed to work. And that goes back to me saying that science is dogmatic in a lot of ways. People don't want to change their ideas and views, even in science. And science is all about changing your view. New evidence should bring new belief.
Yeah, the scientific method literally outlines that.
It literally says it in stone. More evidence, you change what you believe. Because it's after something that's almost impossible to achieve, objective fact. It's almost impossible because you always have to count for the observer. We the observer. If I was one trillionth the size I am now, an electron wouldn't be an electron. It would be a giant, massive cloud of energy if I was a trillionth of the size I am now. So there is no objective truth because you can't discount the observer. As long as we're writing the truth or discovering the truth, we're still observing. And observation changes the observed.
So it really comes down to everything is truly subjective.
It truly is. And that brings us to the ideas of biocentrism. That reality only exists because it's observed. That there is no objective reality outside what we can perceive. It does not exist until it's perceived. You got the double slit theory, where we look away, an electron behaves like a wave, but we look at it and behaves like a particle. It's like it knows it's being observed.
Yep.
It's the ghost on Mario Brothers that chases you when you're not looking, and you turn around and it's like,
yeah, it is. That's a great enough. Analogy.
So then that goes back to the city that you were talking about where, 65,000 people could have been before one of these cataclysms.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So then they had all the technology they needed to keep themselves up and running.
I really think why it was covered was to protect it because they believed it to be a holy place or a meaningful place for whatever reason. They covered it to protect it. I think they knew a cataclysm was coming.
Or just like, and I don't know the name of the people, but out west, the Native Americans would bury their people entombed, sitting upright underneath the ground. Yeah. But
Bury Me Standing.
Yeah.
There's a great book about that called Bury Me Standing. But it's I actually looked up the video. I'm not going to remember his name. He was a Blackfoot chief. He was a Blackfoot Native American chief. And he lived into the 70s. And Josh Schrei talks about him on the Emerald podcast. And literally, he's showing these students of his. He was like, he gets below to the ground, and there's a little ant hill. And it was actually termites. They're winged. Mm-hmm. And he said, in 15 seconds, they will come up. And so they start counting down from 15, and all of a sudden, the termites start flying out of the ground. He could just look at all the factors around him in nature, and he understood the interplay of everything in nature. He could predict to the second when it would start raining. And he was like, I don't have magic powers. I just observe. I pay attention.
Yeah.
I know what causes the rain. Well, I know what causes the termites to come up.
I didn't know this was an odd thing until it became a meme. You know, like, people from the South be like, smells like it's going to rain. And I talked to some people that did not believe that was a real thing. I'm like, no, you can smell the ozone.
Yeah, it's you can ionization. Absolutely smell it. Yeah.
Like, no, we know. We feel the pressure change. You feel it in your ears. Like, what? You guys don't.
Anyone who's had an injury can feel it in that injury. I mean, I feel it in my wrist. Yeah. Anytime the barometric pressure changes.
Mm-hmm. Well, and just like I had said about the seasons, you know, I can, you just feel that. You can feel it coming.
Yeah, coming in. It is an
and
odd season.
And that's one thing that I don't like that I'm seeing is our seasons are messed up, and it's obvious. It's just getting more and more obvious that we're not living in balance with the planet, and it's causing issue. Now, our climate has always been in flux. Mm-hmm. We know for a fact that the poles have shifted hundreds of times, and they've probably shifted hundreds of times while we've been on the planet. But I love fall, and we get ripped off a little more on fall every year.
Yep.
I love spring. We get ripped off a little more on spring every year.
Something very peculiar is happening, too, because you look at the models, and they're saying it's carbon, it's doing this, it's doing that. But then you go back to, like, the 90s all the way through. We had 12 years of the lowest recorded hurricane activity ever.
Yeah.
And now we're just getting just hammered with them at these almost precise times.
Yeah.
To mess up the crop yields.
Yeah.
It's really strange, and it really concerns me.
But a conspiracy theorist such as myself would say, perhaps that's HAARP being engineered, being used to engineer
it's possible.
Shortages or whatever you want to call it.
I always look at where the money is and cost-benefit analysis. I don't see it as being as beneficial. I think that it's possible that they were messing with it, and can't really do it right, so they quit, but it fucked everything up. I can see that more than it's a... Because humans aren't that good at stuff. We're just not. Well,
we covered it in the conspiracy podcast. The last one is that the Operation Popeye, they did that in Vietnam.
Yeah.
And it was through more rudimentary means. We did cloud seeding and various other things we knew that worked, and it worked.
Yeah.
So we've been messing with this since the 60s, 70s. That's all. Yeah. That's in there with all the MK Ultra stuff, Operation Popeye.
Manipulation of weather has been a part of who we are for a long time. Isaac Bonowitz, one of my favorite theologians, he was, I've mentioned him a couple times on the podcast. He wrote a book called Real Magic, which was actually his thesis. He's the only person on the planet to ever graduate from UC Berkeley with a doctorate in magical rite. He literally traveled all over the world watching tribes' different magic rites. And he said one of the most magical things he ever saw, he saw a bushman in Africa do a rain dance and summon a single rain cloud that only rained on him. And he claimed until the day he died that he witnessed that. And we've always been fascinated with controlling weather. Because weather is one of those things that's just... It puts us in our place.
Mm-hmm.
A giant hurricane puts you in your place. A tornado puts you in your place. Floods put you in your place. So, but another oop art that we were talking about earlier was we know that it comes from the dating on it. We believe it comes from the late 1400s, and that is the Voynich manuscript or codex.
This is a very creepy thing.
It's all made of, is it lilum? It's lamb skin, essentially. Look it up, guys. The pictures are amazing. It's illustrated, but it depicts people being built by what looks like aliens. It's written in a language no one has cracked yet. No one knows what it says. And it's huge. It's hundreds of pages long. And it looks like an alien observing the planet. But it's not our planet he's observing.
There are plants that don't exist here. That animals make that sense, don't exist. I mean,
there's a unicorn with a slug body. Like, I mean, just, it's pretty out crazy. There. Yeah. And I think you nailed it on the head. You said when you first looked at the pictures, you're like, that's interdimensional travel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I fully believe that's what's going on there.
I think you nailed it on the head. I think humans have been interdimensionally traveling since the Paleolithic era. I fully believe that's what a true trance state is. As someone who's done DMT, there's no doubt to me that I was on a different plane of existence. Mm-hmm. No doubt. And it's, I understand that I was under the influence of a substance, but you have to experience to fully get it. It felt realer than reality.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot explain it further than that because there's not words for it in our vocabulary. There's just not. It's something you would have to experience. But I literally was on another plane of existence, and I think I was on several. I think it took me out of three-dimensional space and put me into infinite-dimensional space, that's a tough one because you look at the Flatland experiments, you read Flatlander, or you look at the experiments done with it, you take a flat piece of paper and you draw a circle on it. And say that's circle's alive. It's bebopping around, but it can only move up, inside down, left, right, mm-hmm. inside that two dimensions. And then you put a ball on that same piece of paper. All that circle can see is one sliver of that ball. It cannot see the depth of that ball. And so it'd be the same thing if a fifth dimensional creature came down to a 4D level, or a 4D came down to a 3D level. We would only see a single aspect. We mm-hmm. would only see what our perception would allow us to see. I think we interact with interdimensional beings a lot. They're just in multiple dimensions at once. So we would, and I think we ourselves are interdimensional. I think that's what the soul is. It's the piece of us that exists in a higher level dimension. And I don't think anyone who's ever looked at the ocean or looked at a mountain has any doubt. I mean, how can you look at a mountain and not feel that extra-dimensional space, liminal space? So.
Yeah, I'm going to have to look into that manuscript because it isn't something I had ever seen before. But as soon as I saw it, it's like, that was your first reaction.
This is one of the strangest things that I've seen. And there's theory that it's a prank.
Yeah.
But...
That's dedication.
It really is. And it's just to be that.
It
that
looks
far
like someone's life work. Yeah. I mean,
it's like John Audubon's journals turned from, you know, a different.
Yeah. We'll post the link, guys. We'll stick a link up on
Facebook
page.
Check out.
To do a hoax of that nature, boy, you'd have to be like a Tolkien to get that much of an elaborate.
Yeah,
you
would have to be pretty brilliant.
Or a Stephen King, if I might say something like that. Yeah, that's creepy. The picture you showed me was disturbing, and now I'm thinking about that a lot.
Yeah, it's fascinated me now for years, and I specifically sought out that picture because I knew you'd get it.
It's one of the creepier ones.
Well, I think the most disturbing part are the newly finished humans that are sitting there just staring at themselves in that mirror, and they've got like the stitched up sides, and you guys will see this if you look at it, and it's just like...
Yeah.
The posture and just the overall aura that they're giving off in this drawing is just one of total like, oh no.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh no, this is not what I want to be. Like, I do not want to be stuck in this.
Yeah. It's almost like we came from another dimension.
Yes.
We're built there and sent to this one.
It's someone looking
at their three-dimensional self going, oh no.
Yeah.
That's
it's like
me.
When your higher spirit is... put down into that testing ground again, and you're here we go, I don't want to do this.
yeah,
it's really that it's, I mean, I looked at that for 10 seconds max.
Yeah.
And very thought-provoking.
Yeah. It's interesting stuff.
And where did they find that?
I'm not exactly sure. I'll need to do a little more research on it.
Yeah, I'll just look at the link when you guys post it.
I know I've looked it up before, but I don't remember well enough to say. So, but we'll see here. See.
And it makes me think of this another OOP art that. And I don't know the name for it, but it is actually one of the only solid pieces of picked artifact that they have.
Really?
There's really just no proof at all that there were even Pictish culture.
Yeah.
They just know that from basically other people talking about them. Mm-hmm. So they excavated this. Basically, it was a pile of rubble, of course, when they first started, and then they got down into what they discovered had once been a blacksmith's like cave.
Yeah, working. You were talking about this. This is
so
awesome.
What they've got is like a, because of the heat and how dirty his hands were and the contents of what, you know, like the what am I trying to say here? Like the makeup of what was on his hands.
Yeah, yeah, the breakdown.
Yes, it like seared almost, for lack of a better word. It branded this rock with his handprint.
Yes.
And then like his knee prints as well are in the same area. And that is one of the only things that they have. Now they say that he had this underground because they could tell that his whole blacksmith shop was in like a lightless ground dwelling of some sort.
Yeah.
And we would think that was very unsafe, but they said that he used it most likely to differentiate between the temperatures of the rocks, because that's all the light he had was like his forge and the different colors of metal as they were glowing red hot, and that way he would know which one was ready to work with and which wasn't, and how far along they were to, you know, being like
that's super,
I guess, what tempered and cooling and things like that. Yeah,
a different way to understand it.
Mm-hmm. Instead of, you know, the things I'm sure are used now.
I was just reading an article,
but it's like, what if this is a Pictish? I mean, maybe it's not that old.
Yeah.
I guess they would know it wasn't that old, but it's just, I don't know. That's what it brought to mind for some weird reason.
I just read a interesting article that we just discovered in 2016, I believe, the oldest Gaelic site. And we always associate Gaelic with Ireland or Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
Northern Italy.
Oh, very odd.
Yeah, they were next door neighbors to the Thracians. And we knew, I mean, all throughout Scandinavia kind of changed hands multiple times, and there was multiple peoples in Scandinavia. Mm-hmm. But essentially all of Northern Europe had Gaelic speakers, and it was actually late in the game that they moved into Scotland, Ireland, the British Isles, Wales, which Wales actually has the most people born every year as Gaelic as their first language. I wasn't aware of that. It was through that article that I started really researching the Gaels or the Gaelic people. And, we don't associate, I never associated Wales really with Gaelic, but they are more born, that's their mother tongue, Gaelic speakers.
Well, and to me, actually, I have the opposite understanding, is that, yes, Wales is where Gaelic is originates from, and Celtic would be more of the Scottish-Irish.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, again, here we go. I don't believe in coincidences, I don't.
Yeah.
We had talked earlier about the, and I cannot remember, the ruined tablets that they found out in, like, Nebraska or somewhere like that. And they're like, oh, this has to be fake. But they discuss how the Holy Grail actually was brought over here and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And which would kind of tie in, because if you think about the fact that, like, King Arthur was Welsh and all of this, like, I have the, it's weird because I'm not, as we've discussed multiple times, I'm not Christian in any sense of the word, but I have this huge fascination for the mythos of King Arthur, obsessed with it. And so I spent a lot of time as a younger person researching in that, and there's a children's book line, and I cannot think of the name of it, but it was so influential when I was a kid, and there was so much in it that was like good, solid witchcraft stuff. I mean, like, whoever did this, it was legit. I absolutely loved it, and it talked about how the Holy Grail had been moved around the world and all these different things, and I think it's probably... If it were me, and I wanted to hide this artifact that was so powerful, precious, yeah, special, whatever... Why not take it off into the middle of, I mean, the take new,
the
you know.
The uncharted land.
Yeah. Why not plant it smack dab in the middle of that place where nobody would find it?
it's kind of where we get all the Arthenian myth. Mm-hmm. It's a book that we don't know the authors. It was written in that area, Western Europe, several hundred years ago. I'm trying to find in my notes. I'll try to look it up and see if I can't figure it out. I just essentially read all the stories in it last week, and very interesting. It explained things that, because it's written directly from the actual oral tradition.
Right.
This was written several hundred years ago, and it kind of is why the Arthurian Arthurian legend still exists. Is this? It was three books that were together. They were essentially bound together, but they think they're written at different times, and they were kept by a small king in a very small kingdom in, I believe, Wales, is where they were discovered. He had bound them together. Like, it probably something that was passed down through the royalty, I would imagine.
Well, fun fact, when I was 16, I had a horrific skiing accident, and I was, like, unconscious for 2 weeks, and my mom had to always be waking me up, you know, because they sent me home back in the day, you know. They're just like, take her home and wake her up, like, every half an hour. She'll be fine.
Make sure she's alive.
Right, just wake her up every half an hour.
Or she won't.
And she would always wake me up and ask who I was, and I would always say that I was Guinevere. And,
really?
Yeah, yeah.
That's great.
I don't remember the rest of all that, but I do remember that. I also remember that I'd always wanted sea monkeys, and somebody bought me some while I was convalescing, and I killed them all, and I was so sad. And I was all swollen and looked horrible because I'd had this horrible skiing accident. I remember crying with my, like, the elephant man face I had going on. It was good stuff.
My uncle actually fell out of the barn loft when he was a kid, and this was in the early 1950s. He was 9, and he fell and was unconscious for a month, and the doctor came to the house and was like, he'll either wake up or he won't.
Right. I mean, that's pretty much the facts, though, isn't it? I mean, you either wake up or you won't.
And now, that kid would have been airlifted.
Yeah, you know? it would work, you know, it will work itself out or a while. Yeah. I mean, what do you want me to do?
Yeah.
So, for anyone that does not know, sea monkeys are brine shrimp.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're not actual monkeys.
And you know what I did with the poor things? I wanted to move them into their bigger habitat.
Yeah.
So, you know, rather than pour them, because I thought that would be traumatic. I mean, I was trying to be careful. I went, and my dad, he always had this set of syringes for all of his animals, and because he had, like, a vet kit.
Yeah.
But he used it to inject penicillin into, you know, I mean, to give him penicillin shots.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't rinse them out well enough. It killed every single one of my, every shrimp. I killed them all.
Poor shrimp.
That's so crazy. I actually had a friend loosely, in elementary school that literally drank his sea monkeys.
Oh, see, now I don't know why.
On a dare.
Oh.
He literally poured them into a cup and chugged them.
Well, I used to feed those. I had pea puffers. They're brackish water puffer fish. They're very small.
Oh, yeah.
And they need live food. They're very picky. Even at that size, that type of puffer, they are super smart.
Really?
They are the smartest fish I've ever seen. So if you ever want to get an exotic fish, they're brackish. They're not full salt water. Figure eight or pea puffers. I recommend those.
Really?
Yeah.
I had some little puffer fish once, and I did not like them. They have, like, jelly for poop. And it, like, floats to the top, and it's almost like an oil slick.
I think yours might have had a disease.
I think they were super...
oil slick puffers.
They were super healthy, but they were disgusting little things.
They're nasty.
Yeah, they were nasty.
How much penicillin did you give them?
They probably could have used a shot or two. I actually ended up giving those away to a girl I worked with. I was just like, take these things. They're disgusting. They're so gross.
Were they figure eight puffers, or do you remember?
I don't have a clue. They were spotted. They
oil
were spotted.
Spotted puffers, yeah.
They were super cute. But they were disgusting.
Mm-hmm. So this is the last thing I want to touch on here about the ancient artifacts real quick. This is the one that bothers me substantially. And that is the 2.8 billion-year-old nuclear reactor.
We talked about that.
That just... apparently started its own nuclear fusion.
Okay. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Which cannot happen naturally. There is not a situation.
Count for at least one cataclysmic reset, I would imagine, right?
Yeah. Well, we do know that the core of it has melted before. We think it's melted multiple times.
Uh huh.
And the fact that this isn't just like common knowledge. I read about this a decade ago, easily. Yeah. But it's not common knowledge. And it exists. Why are we not talking about it? I'm guessing because someone doesn't want us talking about it.
Well, like, yeah, that seems like something you would want to guard. Because
it would completely change the timeline.
Completely.
There's no way that it was naturally occurring. Not physically possible. We've ran thousands, if not millions, of computer models to see if it could ever, under perfect conditions, form naturally. And it just cannot happen. Nuclear fission will never happen naturally. And not on this planet. There's not enough. It can happen in space, but not on this planet. And, yeah, it happened. And the core, and we were talking about how ancient man had electricity. I think there's not a doubt that ancient man did have electricity.
Well, think about the fact that lightning would have been so, something that you would have been so, it would have been fear, you would have been extremely afraid of it, but you also would, you know, there were people out there like, I got to harness that. Like, that has got to be.
All religion. For fire.
Yes.
All religion, all the polytheistic religions, one of the common myths, one of the monomyths, is a storm god being one of the most powerful gods. You've got Thor, you've got Zeus, you've got Quetzalcoatlus. I mean, all over the world. A storm god. And at some point, that storm god defeats a giant serpent. We don't know why,
right.
But at some point, a storm god defeats a giant serpent.
Interesting.
And we've been obsessed with harnessing the power of nature as far back as our shared knowledge goes. We know that. And a storm god is a representation of that, someone who can control the chaos of lightning. That's the most powerful being. I mean, you can control that. That would be the most powerful thing you would see in nature.
Yes.
Is a lightning strike.
I agree.
That would start a forest.
Especially
fire.
Once you had seen, like, it actually strike something close to you enough that you can see the
and
damage.
See its power.
And
blow a tree apart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, blow a tree apart, hit a friend. I mean,
oh God,
just
so
seeing
weird.
It strike, I mean,
oh, shit.
Would be mind blowing. It's still mind blowing. There's no way to watch a lightning storm and not have a sense of awe and wonder.
Yes.
I don't know anyone that looks up at the night at a storm in the night sky and isn't immediately like, ah.
Right. Or terrified.
Or terrified.
This was probably a week or two ago. I came back real late and I tracked one coming all the way back. And it was the most insane upper atmosphere.
Yeah,
that lightning
I love
I'd
it
ever
when they're
seen.
Really high and kind of in the distance.
And
it
was
so
nonstop. Yeah, I mean, it would hit and then hit and then hit. It was like, this is the wildest thing I've seen in a long time.
Somewhere in South America, and
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yep. Mm-hmm.
It constantly has an electrical storm around it. And I don't think we've done due diligence on understanding the science behind
it. Well, also, understanding the effects of just what being present there for however
it's
long, like an extended period
of
time would be.
There has to be.
I mean, it would almost be worth it just to go up there and hold a light and see what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, you never know.
See,
you could become like a demigod or something.
Yeah,
just for being,
that could be the passage.
I'm guessing if you're going to get powers in this lifetime, that's one of the places you could get them.
Well, I do want to say, I think people should also look up like the London Hammer, because that's one that they feel like they've debunked. So you can see some of the...
Or the main penny.
That's yeah, the main
penny. The drill bit and coal.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh. What was some other ones? Roland's sword. That's a big deal to me. I think you should look up Roland's sword. It's in the Chateau de Notre Dame, above the door.
Explain this.
So Roland is very near and dear to me only because he has turned into Roland of Gilead, who is the main character in the Dark Tower books,
King
which
was,
is a huge deal to me. I'm not a fan of Stephen King as a person, but his work, I feel, comes from somewhere outside.
Mm-hmm.
And he's
it comes
one,
from that corgi, the
that.
Thing of evil. I think that gives him
the thing. Yeah, Molly is just funneling it into him, and that's probably not a good thing because she's mischievous. But so Roland was actually he was seen as being in most places will say that he came from the Arthurian legend as well, and that he was given his sword by Arthur, or some others say that it was from. The hero that saved Troy. Gosh, I can't think of his name. It starts with an H.
Hector?
Yes, thank you, Hector. Hector gave him the sword, and he was just this huge savior back in the day, like Roland was.
Yeah.
And so then something happened to his sword, and this sword is supposed to be kind of like the sword of Gryffindor or something, if that makes, or the Sword of Aragorn. Yeah. I mean, those type of things, all these things.
By the power of Grayskull.
Right, you get all these things that have this powerful sword in them, and one of the most original ones is the Sword of Roland, and they could never find it, so they had been looking for it. It's like the Upart that they've been looking for, but can't really ever solidify where it's at, and now, above the chateau door is this sword that is buried in the wall, about halfway to the hilt. And it obviously is like they've encased it so that it can't be weathered anymore. They won't allow any testing to be done. They're super protective of the sword. And there's really no way to tell how it even got into this rock. Now, there's a couple other swords in the stone that are around the world that we could talk about, but that would take some more research on my part. I've known them and then forgotten.
Yeah.
But the one of Roland is really awesome. I really think that's nifty.
That one is interesting.
But then it makes me think about, I think probably we touched on this a minute ago, is that I'm just going to throw out there, I think probably the Holy Grail is the Upart of all time.
I would say so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And nobody can find it. Yeah.
The Holy Grail and then the Crystal Skulls
really
will go with Indiana
Jones.
Isn't
that weird?
We really don't know what it is.
Yeah.
To find it.
We think of it as a cup or a chalice.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not biblically
knowledgeable,
but I think that is what it's portrayed as, correct?
Yeah generally.
But we don't really know.
The Ark of the Covenant is a box that no one can look in. No one's allowed to touch. They had to have the Judeo temples built around it to protect it. It was very specific in the ritual the certain people had to go through to even pray to it and things like that. So it almost appears like a nuclear reactor. I mean, that's literally
that's what they represented it as. It gives like a power of a god. I mean, nuclear fission is the power
of a
god.
And that's how they represented it in Indiana Jones. It melted people.
Yeah.
So very interesting.
That is interesting.
Yeah. So, anyway, I just kind of thought that as we were talking about it, that it seems like one of the, maybe the number one, maybe mysterious artifact, because it's not really, I guess we would be able to see it and maybe figure out how it was made or whatever, but the Holy Grail.
So, one I really want to hit home for people, I mentioned it earlier, that I want you guys to go and look up is the Japanese step pyramids. Look up these pictures.
What, Yonaguni is what you'll find it called, right?
Yep, the step pyramids and the manuscript. The one-inch manuscript.
Yeah.
Those are the two that are, in my opinion, those are the two. The Vovinish manuscripts are the weirdest, and the step pyramids are the most compelling to me.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's no doubt that these are man-made. They are structures. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the Yonaguni monument. It has hieroglyphs, which Japan was not known for hieroglyphs, but yet the Johan people, which they think built it, we know that they weren't scuba diving for decades to build these things.
Right. I mean, even to consider the fact that, you know, you've got all these deep divers that can hold it, that's a little above and beyond what could be done.
We couldn't do it now, though. It would still take us decades today to build something like that underwater. Definitely something worth looking into. I think we've put a lot of stuff out there that I think you guys get out there and Google this stuff, look it up, tell us what you think.
I hope that it's a lot of stuff you had not heard about.
Hopefully we're bringing you some new knowledge, and look it up, reach out to us, discuss stuff with us, reach out on the Facebook page and tell us what you think. What your theories on this stuff is, and if you got any others out there that we may have overlooked or missed or didn't know about, we're always looking for new information, guys. And the whole idea behind this podcast is to get people talking and interacting.
Yep.
So reach out, talk to us.
Yeah, and we would love to do a follow-up episode.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
We look forward to it.
Yeah,
so. I'd love to do some stuff off of suggestions.
Yeah,
it would be great to get. You know, I would love to have to actually research something that I knew nothing about then actually discuss a new opinion.
That's something we've been
kind of
pushing for here lately, is to try to get our fans out there. If you're a fan of the podcast, get on there and give us suggestions.
Yep.
Let us know. We need to make a poll. We need to do
another poll.
Another poll post, put some options out there.
Not poll
have
poll,
it to where they can
poll post.
They can add stuff, add suggestions to it. Because... we're just normal people that think a little deep. There's a lot of stuff out there we haven't come across. And if you want to hear about it, we'll put the work in. We'll do the research and give our opinion on it and our thoughts on it. So don't be afraid to give us suggestions, interact with us, tell us some things we've missed, or tell us things we might have fucked up.
Absolutely. We don't have our house fact checker anymore, it's on you all.
Yeah, keep us honest.
Don't let us sound like fools here.
Yeah, please. Keep us honest. And Aaron can only do so much.
Uh-huh.
She's only got two hands.
I mean, I'm probably not the best one for that, because I'm...
Yeah.
Probably just as dastardly as you two, if not more. So
we're gonna get ourselves
we
in
are
trouble.
Dastardly.
Right. Exactly.
We are rebellious. Yeah. So, well, everyone, thank you again for tuning in. Thank you for listening to this. Thank you for all your input. We have some stuff that we do have planned. Some very important, very emotional stuff coming.
Yeah.
We'll let you know when it's there. It looks like Sunday's going to be the day. I have some obligations on Thursdays now, so we may have to change the Friday release unless we can get ahead and then start dropping the episodes.
Get a couple in the pocket.
Yeah, a week behind, which I like to do, because this is very open forum, open talk. It's not like we're talking about modern events. So, tell us what you're thinking. Stay weird.
Yeah.
And just try to enjoy the ride, guys. It gets rocky at times, but trust me. Yeah, it'll get better.
Keep on dumpster diving, guys.
Keep on dumpster diving. Later.